I'm Frank Folio. I'm one of the assistant directors of the talent development program that Dr. Dooley spoke so kindly of. It was founded in response to Dr. King's killing in 1968, which is all familiar to us because we've just celebrated the 50 years of the I Have a Dream speech. And those 13 students who walked on this campus in 1968, here we are 45 years later. It was said that they would not be successful, and it was because of their test score. No single student in all those 45 years has been acceptable under the regular admission standard, and the reason is test scores. Now we come around to another barrier called NECAP. This past summer, 350 students were in our summer program. 90% successful. 56% 3.0 and above. 14% perfect 4.0s. My question is, how much opportunity is going to be lost in that inner city core of Central Falls, of Providence, and of Pawtucket behind this NECAP? You have a crisis on your hands, and it is about to become chaos. And I want to know very clearly from somebody up there, what is the plan?
I think I'd like to... I'd like to take a stab at that at the beginning as the person as in charge of the policy or the backlog of to give you a little bit of background. First of all, the reason that we don't have cut scores like Massachusetts did was for exactly the reason that you just laid out. Leo DeMeo was one of my mentors, and as those of you who work in the talent development program know, he was the champion for all and the voice for all and voice for many that didn't have a voice. So I share your concerns. So I have two questions that we raise all the time at the Board of Education. First of all, we're judging each individual person against themselves. So all of the students that come in, as you said, after they had this robust summer, you're getting them better. They're getting better prepared to start school in September. And that's all we're asking in the state assessment. We're asking them to do better after a year of preparation than they did the last time. We're not asking them to reach a 1, a 2, a 3, a 5, a 9, a 200. We're asking them to do better. So we're judging each individual person against themselves. That's first and foremost. The second part is we do have a crisis on our hands. And the crisis we have on our hands is that we have lowered the standards. And we have to, as a state, say, right now, we have to hold firm. We have to begin to start the process of having, at some point in time, when we get into the park and to the Common Core, a test that really is a 12th grade graduation requirement. I don't think people understand that the bar we have set is between 9th and 10th grade as part of a NECAP. The other thing is that people don't understand that there are other tests. It's not just the NECAP test. So if somebody doesn't test well on that particular test, the Accuplacer test can be used. That's the one that's used at the community college. And so there are other alternatives there. It's not a new discussion. This discussion began in 2002, was implemented in 2008. The time to have discussions about these tests, in our opinion, is over. Now we have to start beginning the process of how we solve the problems rather than having the discussion around the test. It's not the politically correct thing to say. It's not the way that a lot of people like to hear at this point, but it's the truth of how we move our state forward.
Yeah, we've had...
Let me just jump in for just a minute. Over dinner, we had an interesting conversation at our table with a University of Rhode Island student who's from Massachusetts, where, as you just mentioned, they have a standardized test requirement for high school graduation. And I asked her, what was it like? And she said, well, it was just a way of life. It was just a reality. And you saw that students ahead of you were passing it. And, you know, really, she didn't feel that worried about it. So I'm curious, Commissioner Gist, how long do you think it will take for Rhode Island to get to where Massachusetts is, where people are just seeing this as a way of life?
Well, the first thing that we have to do is exactly what the chairwoman said, is to stop debating it. We need to focus on implementation. This is not about testing. It's about math, primarily. Our students are not where they need to be. And it isn't a crisis that has emerged recently. It is something that has been going on for decades in our state, that we have not been preparing students for life after high school. Be clear about what we're asking. As Eva said, we're asking for our students to make progress in a year or a year and a half, or to be partially proficient on 9th and 10th grade standards. And there's not only the NECAP, which is our state assessment, which, by the way, is an excellent assessment. There is also a list of more than 10 other assessments that can be used that might be more along the lines of a student's interests or future plans after high school. And in addition to that, there's a waiver process. So if the test itself is the barrier, it's a testing issue, they actually have skills in reading and math at the 9th and 10th grade level, they will not be prevented from graduating. So the hyper-focus on the state assessment, the NECAP, is unproductive. It is not about keeping kids back. It's about solving a problem that hasn't been in place for far too many years. Eventually, talent development is an amazing program. In fact, one of the members of the Board of Regents who was on the board when these regulations were put into place, which was, by the way, before I came to Rhode Island, is a product of the talent development program and a huge advocate for these graduation requirements, because she knows from a personal perspective how important it is that students receive an adequate education before they leave our high schools, so that while that program is great, they shouldn't have to exist. We ought to be able to prepare our students before they leave.
So I'd like to ask a question on behalf of the Equity Council here at the University of Rhode Island. We wrote an opinion piece in the Providence Journal that some of you may have read, where we asked in the end for a moratorium on the NECAP test so that we could prepare for the PARC assessment and put the curriculum in place and to put the financial supports that are needed to help close the gap. So I'd like some response to that question.
So my question about, there is some people saying, well, let's just wait until the PARC assessment. The PARC assessment is coming. Let's just wait. So what happens to these next few graduating classes? We just continue the pattern that we've had, handing out diplomas that for some students are a guarantee that they're not going to be able to do what they'd like to do when they leave our high schools.
But there's no curriculum aligned to the NECAP.
That's actually absolutely not true. That is absolutely not true, that there's no curriculum aligned to the NECAP. I mean, Providence, for example, years before I came to the state, was putting their curriculum in place, so that's just factually inaccurate. And again, think about what we're talking about. 9th and 10th grade reading and math before their senior year in high school. Think about what we're saying as a state. You know what? That's too hard.
But we're not even asking them to reach that bar. We're only asking them essentially to make progress. So
exactly.
Are we really making sure that these graduates now are going to be prepared for college?
Pardon?
Well, are we really making sure that even these graduates now will be prepared for college?
No. Let me be clear. The only guarantee that I can make for you right now is we will continue, even with these expectations, we will continue to graduate students who are unprepared. I guarantee you that, because we've allowed them to show growth, because we've set the expectation at partial proficiency, because we have all these safety nets. We did that because we recognize that not all students have gotten the education that they needed every single year of they've gotten. They've found themselves in high school too far behind. Not their fault.
How did we get here, Commissioner Gist? How did we fall so far that so many students are reaching 12th grade without even a 9th grade level of math and reading knowledge?
Actually, that's my question. I'm elementary ed, and you're going to be shocked at what I have to say. I'm from Pawtucket, 17 years of elementary ed, 10 in second grade, the rest 4, 6, 1. And I actually agree with Gist on this one point. They need to be able to pass that test in 10th grade. I think it's a low standard already because I have kids in college and I know what they have to do. My question is, I could have identified for you in second grade who they were. We have research-based knowledge of how far I can move a child in a year. Yeah. We've gone above and beyond. Our elementary teachers are closing those gaps and moving them further. Yep. It's not enough. And you provide no safety nets at our level. There's no extended day mandatory by a parent. There's no weekend mandatory. There's no holding your license because you're not showing up for school. You don't have nothing. And yet you look at them in 10th grade and wonder why they're where they were when we've been screaming for help in second grade. And
we agree with you.
And you make us promote them. And you make us assign them. And we know they're not ready. And there's nowhere we can put them. We've been telling you since they were 10. Why are you surprised when they're in 10th grade?
I'm actually not
surprised. We're not surprised at all. But I ask you, I say as the policy person, so we agree with every word you said. So what's the answer? Is the answer that we don't have a test? Is the answer that we don't at some point hold them responsible? We agree with you. The other thing is also the state sets the highest mandates. We set the mandates. In terms of what happens at the individual school district level, we don't control that at all. So you're talking about extended day schools and teachers having mandatory meetings and things like that. That's not a Board of Education mandate. That all happens at the local school committee level. That happens in the schools themselves. As the commissioner said, excellent schools are doing a lot of that stuff on their own. Should they be doing that? Absolutely not. Teachers shouldn't have to stay after and work for no money. Teachers shouldn't have to work on the weekends for no money. You shouldn't have to do these kinds of things. However, on the other hand is, we can't lower the standards and say, because a second grader, we know in second grade, this child wasn't passing it, what's the answer to the question? The other thing is that you said, Diane, that I think really disturbs me about the conversation that I'm hearing educators, is you're saying the curriculum doesn't fit with the kneecap. And I say, what does that mean? Does that mean we're not teaching how to do basic algebra? Because like a lot of people did, they look at tests, they look at what happens. Of course the curriculum teaches to kneecap. Of course that's what kneecap tests. We had the people that came in that wrote the tests that spoke to us, and we had the opportunity to have anybody come in who wanted to talk about it not being a valid test that we had heard. Nobody showed up. What they talked about was the fact that the testing isn't the way to go, not that the kneecap was the wrong test. So the idea that you say to the public as an educator that we're not kneecap, the curriculum isn't geared toward kneecap, I think really is very misleading. Kneecap tests math, basic algebra. Every curriculum teaches algebra. I have 5 children that went through public schools. They learned algebra. They're taught algebra. They're tested on algebra. You know, it doesn't have to be something that is, I think, scientific. To say that we don't have the curricula that teaches to it. It doesn't, I think as a parent, it's something that's very scary.
I'd like to ask you a question about why high school students perform so poorly in math in the United States on international standards. And the reason I ask it, I have a PhD in electrical engineering 40-some years ago. In the business I was in, had thousands of engineers working for me, 500 PhDs in high technology. Here's from the Wall Street Journal. The United States ranks 30th in math assessment in international standards. Who's ahead of us? Obviously, Asian countries, right at the top. But who else is above us? Hungary, UK, Czechoslovakia, Slovak, Slovenia, Iceland, Estonia. How come we perform so poorly in math? I think I understand. I'd like to hear what you say.
I think we have it.
So we as a country need to raise our expectations for the kind of math that our students can be doing in our K-12 schools. And it's about the complexity of the math. It's about the rigor of the courses that they're taking. And there are too many students in our country who are taking courses that, you know, they should be taking algebra in eighth grade, ninth grade at minimum, and we have students that aren't taking it until their junior year or senior year, or passing it until their junior or senior year. So it's about making sure that they get those courses sooner and then bringing them onto more and more complex.
Use the microphone.
I'll make one comment again. I think there's one word that's missing that captures it. Fear of mathematics. Parents fear mathematics. Teachers fear mathematics. Students fear it. So they don't realize that it's an unending downward spiral because of the fear of mathematics of it.
Yeah. I think we certainly devalue it sometimes. I think we sometimes somehow make it socially acceptable to say we don't like math or we're bad at math, or we identify our students when they're young and we say, you know, this one child is great at math, the other one, oh no, she's terrible at math, and we make those decisions early. So there's some of that that goes on as well. I also think content is really important for our educators to have really deep mathematical content when they go into the classroom, including for our elementary and middle school students, which hasn't always happened historically. It goes back to our teacher prep programs and the work that we're doing with our higher education colleagues right now in our teacher preparation programs. And then I'll just say one last thing about that, which is the value of the transition that we're making right now from the standards that we have now in the state to the Common Core state standards. The design of those standards is basically looking at math and really getting deep and solid number sense of students early on in their school career, in kindergarten and first grade and second grade. And then instead of touching a little bit on everything, a lot of times people will say it's an inch deep and a mile wide, we touch on everything every year, but we never get deep in any of the mathematical concepts. The idea behind the Common Core, which are the transition that we're making to these new standards, is really, really deep mathematical understanding so that when students move on to more complex mathematical courses, they have that basis of deep understanding.
Hi, I'm Jake. I graduated from Pilgrim High School last year. But, you know, once a patriot, always a patriot, so I fight for them too. But it seems like you're talking about the people this test targets are students. You say you love the students, but the only opinion you're not hearing is that of the students. They feel like statistics, and they don't feel like people. Why don't you listen to the students?
Well, first of all, if you're directing the question at me, I listen to students all the time. I've been thrilled about one of the things that is really remarkable about Rhode Island is the number of youth development and youth leadership programs that are in place, especially in Providence. There are a whole bunch of them. I started meeting with them from the first month or so that I've been in the state, and I've continued to meet with them on a regular basis. So, you know, this perpetuation that the student voices haven't been heard is just not true. That doesn't mean that we agree on everything. And I think that there's a difference between listening and being open and wanting to work together on some things and disagreeing on other things. So you heard a teacher saying, I agree with you about this one thing. That's fine. We don't have to agree about everything, but we have to make a commitment to continue working together, and that's certainly the commitment that I have with youth leaders. And by the way, not all youth think the same way. Contrary to what seems to be perpetuated, and not all teachers think the same way, we all have differing opinions, even among different categories like that.
Well, we'd like to thank you this evening. We're now 25 minutes over. I appreciate the patience of the panel, and I appreciate the patience of the audience. We're in week two. We have 12 more weeks to go, and each evening we'll have a discussion session as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Now you can take your headset off.
Ha 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 ha.